So my name's Glenn. I'm a dentist by profession and a pastor by passion. I'm very, very fortunate that I have been given the privilege of trialling in the North New South Wales Conference what we would call bivocational ministry. Bivocational ministry, for those of you who are unaware, is where somebody tries to do two jobs badly. So I work as a dentist Monday through Thursday, and then I take Fridays off, and then I give everything that I have in pastoral ministry over the weekend in tandem with another young guy called Josh Newbegin, who is finishing his theology degree this year and is paid a 50% budget by the conference. For those of you who know briefly the map of Australia, Byron Bay is its most easterly point. It's a beautiful village that has approximately 2 million bed nights of accommodation every year. It's estimated about 1.2 million international travellers will come through Byron Bay every year. And Byron Bay Church is a $5 million piece of real estate strategically located directly opposite Woolworths, which is the best place to shop. And I would say that it's almost inevitable that every single one of those 1.2 million tourists that come to Byron Bay will walk past our church. At the moment, we've got a gate and a fence there, which I'm not that excited about. And hopefully at some stage we'll meet a generous philanthropist who will give us enough money to tear down the fence and bring our church right out to the front. We run in association with our church a small cafe called Manor Haven. I know that some of you have visited Manor Haven. And Manor Haven is ranked number one out of 53 cafes, and I think number one out of 118 restaurants in Byron Bay. So this little vegan cafe is punching above its weight in terms of its popularity and its patronage. And there are people in church today as a result of visiting the cafe and making connection with some people who were bold enough to introduce them to some Christian literature and talk to them about their stories and inspire them to think about the direction their life was going and move towards a friendship with Jesus. But our church has some really unique challenges. The average age of our membership, give or take 5 or 6 years, is probably about 65. Most of our key members are pensioners, retired, have been living in Byron Bay from before it became more expensive than Sydney to buy real estate. And so our congregation is an eclectic mix of locals who have lived there long enough to be able to afford to, and the other saints who can't afford but for some reason choose to come from areas outside of Byron Bay to fellowship at the church that is there. And for those of you who know anything about churches, they can be expensive to run, particularly if you have an evangelistic heart. And our total budget for the year is somewhere in the order of $8,000. So it's quite a small church with a small budget, but with a huge potential for ministry. And so luckily enough for me, the conference came to me knowing that I was very actively involved in preaching and in talking. I think in 2017 I preached 42 times in the year, as well as being a full-time dentist. And we had a bit of a discussion, and I said, look, rather than me just being an itinerant preacher filling gaps in people's preaching plans, can we try an experiment where we actually take a bold move and take someone from a lay position and give them a position in a church and help it grow? And because Byron Bay is such a tiny church and such a small budget and I'm free, they figured that it was a risk that they would take to appoint me to be a volunteer associate lay pastor at this small church. And I've been working with Justin, who, as I said, is finishing his theology degree. And Joshua, and he's finishing his theology degree. So together, Josh and I, he's barefoot, long hair, looks like Jesus, and I'm old, grey, and want to be like Jesus. And we've been together in pastoral ministry this year, and it's been fantastic. Last year we had a baptism, and somebody that has come back to Christ because of the call of God on their heart was baptised, and it's been a real blessing. So here is my story at the moment. I'm 50 and a bit, And going to the bank and wanting to borrow large sums of money to put a dental clinic right where you see that red arrow on the banks of the Richmond River in Ballina. My son is just about ready to graduate from dentistry, and I'm hoping that when he gets out, I'll be able to trick him into working so hard that I can do dentistry and he can pay off my debts. That's the goal. And he's pretty supportive of that goal. Hence my graphic. I kind of feel a little bit like a fish out of water. I don't know whether I'm a bad dentist because I'm trying to be a pastor or a bad pastor because I'm trying to be a dentist. But I thought that it would be worth sharing with you a little bit of, I guess, my story, some of my frustrations, some of my challenges, because for me, I actually think that bivocational ministry is going to become something of a trend within our church as we see our resources dwindling and we see people passionate about ministry reaching their 50s and 60s where they've kind of got to the point financially in their own journey where they can choose between being useful or going on more world trips. And I think that all of us will get to that stage in our lives where if we've been faithful and we've worked hard, that God will have blessed us and we've probably got somewhere comfortable to live that we mostly own and the bank stopped annoying us or being upset about, you know, late mortgage payments. And we've got decades of our lives that we can give back to God in some form of ministry. So my story was I started off as a young dentist. I was invited before I graduated from dentistry to be a missionary by the church. And I went over to a place called Dhaka in Bangladesh and I began my dental career as a missionary. I came back to Australia for a couple of years to increase my surgical skills. And then my wife and I found ourselves again in Pakistan, working at the Karachi Adventist Hospital as missionaries. And that was going to be our life plan, to give our life to God in mission service. And it was possible as a dentist to get into a Muslim country where it was a little bit more difficult for pastoral ministry to occur and to be involved in working with the Islamic community and ministering to the small minority Christian groups that were there. But as a consequence of my arrogance and irritants, I was managed to be sacked by the church when I was in Pakistan for taking objection to the chief executive officer of the hospital who wanted to give everybody a 10% pay rise on condition that everybody would tithe. And I kind of pointed out that the great controversy made some rather strong references to religious organisations that attempted to enforce their opinions on others. And as a result, I got a unanimous vote of the board against his direction. So when I was back in Australia helping my wife have our first baby, he got the hospital board together and voted that I not come back to irritate him any longer. So I was in Australia, sacked after giving up a career in facial surgery to give my life in mission service and feeling a tiny bit sorry for myself. So I went, like Moses, out into the wilderness, and for the next 20 years I spent my life in ministry and work in dentistry to the Indigenous Australians, and that was going great guns. I managed to write national policy for one of the major political parties. I managed to sit on a Senate committee investigating the state of oral health with Indigenous Australians. I finished my Master's in International Health and I was in the process of doing a PhD at the University of Sydney in the oral health consequences of normalising poor oral health, because any of you who know who have worked with Indigenous Australians, unfortunately, they often get to a position where what we would consider poor health, they consider normal. And so I wanted to look at the oral health consequences of a health system that essentially only treated acute need and failed to address chronic unaddressed problems, which is endemic in some of the Indigenous population. But as the political pendulum swing from left to right, I suddenly found myself in 2016 having my boss hand me a letter of termination with tears streaming down his face saying, "Glenn, the politics has played out such that the government will no longer fund our service and they've changed the way they're providing oral health services. And even though you've done a master's and you're doing a PhD and you've given 20 years of your life to working in this sector, this is your last day." And that was a bit of a kick in the teeth for me, and it's kind of like, I guess, the reality of many people living in Australia, that often what we intend to happen doesn't necessarily end up the way that we think it will turn out. And so I prayed really hard and I said, God, you know, this was my passion. It was my thing. You know, I was regularly presenting at international conferences on Indigenous oral health. I knew all of the key players, the key stakeholders. I had a voice. I had leverage. I think I was, you know, holding the flag for that Christian principle that wants to help the disadvantaged. And it was my thing. And then all of a sudden I find myself, as I said, borrowing large sums of money and entering the capitalist end of dentistry, where for the last 10 to 15 years of my life I fully expect to look at people in the eye and ask for a week's wages for an hour of my time. And that's a real, real challenge for me. I really struggle with it. It's not something that I'm used to or that I enjoy. So I do feel very much like a fish out of water. But I think it's when we're at our most vulnerable that God can be the biggest in our stories. Would you agree? And so my passion, and I guess I'm an experiment in progress, I'm a data set that you guys can consider, is midway through I'm wanting to make this career shift and say, okay, if I can't be involved in direct ministry using my profession, then maybe I can use my profession to support me in ministry in another capacity. And so bivocational ministry is the thing that I'm choosing. And I think there are some merits to it. When I was born in 1967... Australia was nominally 88% Christian. Today, I don't think we're anything near that, are we? The 2016 census suggests that there were just over 53%, I think, of Australians that identify themselves as Christian. But by identifying themselves as Christian, they've got some kind of cultural branding or affiliation with the church that they're likely to choose for their marriage or their christening or their funeral. But active participation in the Christian faith in Australia is just rapidly falling away. And we now, if we want to connect with people, are very unlikely to find that something that's branded Christian is going to be their first point of interest. And I think that we all know that statement so well, that Christ's method alone will bring true success. And the first part of that statement is that Christ mingled with men. And I think that it's the mingling, it's the connecting, it's establishing networks with people that is so critical. And as I thought to myself in my own little existential crisis, now that I've been essentially sacked three times in my life, twice by the Aboriginal Medical Service and once by the church, what do I do? And pastoral ministry has always been something that's been a burden of mine. Doody will know that from when I was a young kid. It's always been a real passion of mine to be involved in ministry. I thought I can leave a natural network that exists, patients that have been mine for 20 years, and go into pastoral ministry where it's going to be incredibly difficult for me to make connections with people in the community. And I thought, no, we really have an opportunity as health professionals. We've established a lot of the basics of that connection that's so necessary to plant the seeds of the gospel, in that we have natural networks that exist outside the church. And it is possible within the Adventist culture to become so totally immersed in the brand of Seventh-day Adventist that we go to a Seventh-day Adventist school, we marry a Seventh-day Adventist, we teach or work in a Seventh-day Adventist institution, we're buried in a Seventh-day Adventist institution, and when they go and do a forensic analysis of us, we're just filled with Marmite and nut meat. And I think that there's a real capacity for us to broaden our horizons, as Dr. Neblett has suggested to us, that we move beyond the Jerusalem and we move beyond the Judea and we get out into the Samaria and to the uttermost parts of the world. And so for me, I think there's a compelling reason that all of us should see ourselves as potentially ministers. And the other thing that I think is a growing reality is in my conference, the North New South Wales conference, please forgive me, Russell Halliday, if you ever listen to this on Audioverse, but I think that we're losing from our budget this year 7 or 8 pastoral positions, purely and simply because tithe incomes are not keeping pace with kingdom growth. And I think it's becoming a growing reality that in our conference it costs around about $100,000 to have a pastoral appointment by the time you pay them a wage, keep their car with petrol, give them a laptop every 2 or 3 years and finance the odd trip to the GC or an information tour to South America. It's an expensive job to have pastors. And so the secularisation of Australia, the dwindling resources of our tithe base are compelling reasons for me to sit up and say, hey, instead of leaving my opportunities to have a natural network and an income to become a pastor, I want to have a crack at bivocational ministry where I can be self-supporting and yet passionate still about Christ. And this is reflecting, I guess, the General Conference's emphasis that we are all ministers. Would you agree? We are all pastors. And whether we have a title or whether we don't have a title or whether we're recognised or whether we're not recognised, as Dr. Neblett pointed out this morning, as soon as we fall in love with Jesus, there is a passion within us to want to share that. And I think that we all have networks that are given to us as a gift from God that we can't really get access to were we not in the roles and responsibilities that we have. So some of the benefits of bivocational ministry is that I'm cheap, I'm free, I'm grounded in the community, and I'm not isolated from the challenges of my audience. It's sometimes very easy to speak to other people's problems from a distance, but Jesus was incarnational. He didn't yell from heaven. He came down and he immersed himself among us. And all of the problems that are faced by my parishioners are faced by me. I struggle to pay my mortgage. I struggle to keep my children clothed and educated. I have a mother-in-law who lives with me. It's all of the kind of things that challenge them challenge me. And I think that there's a real benefit in being grounded in the community in order to speak to the community. And I think that's a real blessing. But there are also some huge risks that the church is very nervous about. And in this experiment, we sometimes struggle to work our way through some of these challenges. The first thing is that if they don't pay me, they don't have the same kind of control over me. And I know that the church doesn't want to control me, but there are still accountability systems that are very much tied to your payroll. If you don't submit your ministerial reports every month, well, they can just stop paying you. But when you're a volunteer, they really have no control. And so it's a big gamble for the church to say to somebody who isn't on their payroll, we trust you with, and we're going to give you some responsibility. It's very hard to move me. A dodgy pastor, they just say, look, we've got an opening in Wilcannia. We would love you to go and do some ministry out there. And if you don't want to move to Wilcannia, then you can tender your resignation. But when you're a volunteer and when you're involved in bivocational ministry and your practice can't just relocate every 2.5 to 3 years, the conference will look at you and go, if we put this guy on, how do we put him off when he stops being effective or when he starts to become a liability and not an asset? And the issues of control and accountability are things that we really, I guess, have to work through in this model. And I know that our conference is very keen to see an increase in volunteer pastors and in volunteer contribution. But it's something that probably the union will eventually have to sit down and try and work out how we can say to somebody, look, we want to put you on as a bivocational pastor, but here's our KPIs and here's our measuring sticks and here's our accountability and here's our contract and the way that we expect it to work. For me, the biggest challenge with bivocational ministry, though, is that it gives me an excuse to wear two uniforms and to think that what I need to do is go in there to the dental clinic and earn as much money as I can in 3 days so that I can miraculously transform myself into a white righteous saint and help poor people and be kind the other days that I'm a pastor. And I don't know whether any of you sometimes feel like spiritual schizophrenics, like you're trying to live two lives at the same time, but I find in dentistry the last thing I want to do is offend and upset the people that are paying my mortgage, so I wait until I'm not wearing my dental uniform and then I go and knock on somebody's door and confront them and become a real thorn in their side. And what I'm really trying to do is pray to God that he will help me to stop partitioning my life and seeing that these people are my church and these people are my patients, but instead say to God, I'll get a much better sleep at night if when I come home from treating my patients, I don't feel the need to go and do 6 more Bible studies because I've actually had 16 people sit in my chair that have been the targets of my ministry through the day. Does that make sense? This dualism that's so easy to affect us, where we're living so many multiple hats all the time. I just want God to work in my life so that I can have a fully integrated ministry. And it doesn't mean that I stop being involved in my church, but it's that I see a natural integration of my patients who are just not yet church members. And we can see that streamlining, effortless transition. I just want to finish because I don't want to take too much time this afternoon, and I know that we're just so dense in our stories. But I just want to bring to your attention one of my heroes called Mrs. Dr. Caro. One of the things I've had the greatest trouble with in my life is charging people money. It's just something that I really, really struggle with. And I love being a missionary because I didn't really have to worry too much about charging money. And working in the Indigenous sector, I was just paid a salary, so I didn't have to charge anyone. I loved it. But when I get out into private practice, all of these people come to me and they all want pro bono work. And it's sometimes really hard to try and balance the need to want to help people and the need to stay viable. And so when some of the significant pastors around turn up in my chair, I often treat them for free. When Ellen White went to see Dr. Caro, she charged Ellen White £60 to make a set of dentures. Now, that was back in the 1890s, and if you Google, get your Google out and you just go, how much was £60 worth in 1890 in today's dollars? It would be like about $6,500 to $7,000 of our money for a set of dentures. And it just blew me away. I go Dr. Caro, charging the profit. Man, David Asherick's had free dentistry as long as he's been in Australia. I consider it an honour for him to be in my chair. But Mrs. Dr. Caro, Ellen White rocks up. She just charges it. Bang, goes. And I thought, man, she's going to get ripped. Ellen White's going to tear shreds off Mrs. Dr. Caro. But look at what Ellen said. Sister Caro is a superior dentist and is of high repute in these parts. She earns a great deal of money by her work, but nothing is expended on luxuries. Sister Caro not only carries her diploma for dentistry, but she has a ministerial license and bears many burdens in the church. When no minister is present, she speaks to the church. The Lord blesses this noble, unselfish woman. Are there a few sermons in that passage? This woman that charges the prophet $6,000 for a set of dentures, man, I would expect that she would get some really strong testimony about having no solidarity with those who are on the front line of ministry and doing her bit to contribute to Christ's work by letting her off scot-free. No, what Ellen White is saying is that this woman is doing what dentists do, but she's not doing it selfishly. She's doing it as a tent-making ministry, and we won't go through the whole passage, but she supported so many people through their college degrees, and she had so many places where she would invest the money that she brought into the kingdom, and she didn't see the income that she collected as her own. She was really an unselfish believer and convert and recruit to the kingdom. And when I read about Mrs. Dr. Caro, as I'm making this transition from what I would call social justice dentistry, where I've been in prisons and flying doctors and remote Aboriginal communities for almost my entire career, I think to myself, pray for me as I become a capitalist, that I can become an unselfish one. And I don't want to make a great deal of money. I just want to survive, as most of those of you who are here. I can feel it and I can hear it resonating in all of our stories that we're not in this to make millions. But we do have the capacity to establish networks with people that otherwise we may never come in contact. And we do have the capacity to generate incomes that give us the privilege of being able to help God's work and to sustain 10,000 toes or Ardawifi Hospital or some young person who needs a bit of a hand with their school fees. And so what I would really like to leave you with is that I'm kind of working in a space where I have an official title and an official recognition by the church as a bivocational pastor, but I know that all of us that are here this afternoon, we have a passion for the kingdom. We have capacity to make an impact. And I just want to challenge you, every person that we have in our networks, whether it's family, whether it's our neighbours, whether it's people at church, whoever we come in contact with, God has given us the privilege of saying, Lord, please allow me to be a conduit so that through my love of you and through my story, they may be affected and they may be benefited for your kingdom. Thanks very much. And if any of you have got anything to come and talk or suggestions you want to make or questions you want to ask, I'm really passionate about seeing all of us become more immersed in ministry and building the kingdom. And if we can just rub stories and come off better for it, that would be a great privilege.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.